Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 21st of September. The big man rotation. What will it be this season? Plus your questions on a Thursday edition of Facebook Live. It's Locked On Jazz right now. Pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Thanks so much for tuning into the program today. We do this every day. It's your Jazz Insight you can't get anywhere else. You can listen to it on iTunes, on your Android, as well as on Alexa or on your Google Home, like this thing right here. So you can do all of that. You also can catch it on Spotify if you would like. The essence of today's show is your interaction, so hope you drop in the questions. Appreciate you very much for tuning into the program today and joining along the way. Jazz have kind of, their open gyms, I think, kind of have closed down, and Monday's media day has been announced, and we get, Ron Boone and I will be live at UtahJazz.com for all of media day, and so that'll be a huge program for you Monday, so it's close. It's time to get ready to roll here a little bit. All right, one quick little deep thought for you, and this is definitely, I'm just going to share it. I don't think I'll actually back up my words on this one as much as I'd like to. But I do. I just kind of want to share it. And here's what I want to share with you. So there's a dear friend of mine who, throughout any time we do these live programs, she usually puts up her little heart and I giggle. And she's one of my dearest friends from high school. She turned me down for the prom. So there's nothing, you know, there's no romantic stuff there. Just a great friend. And she probably won't drop the heart today because she's going through her final days of radiation for cancer. So on Tuesday of this week, I got on a plane and got a cheap airfare and got on a plane and flew to Oakland and spent the day with her. And here's the thought I want to share with everyone. So I probably spent $200. And so, yes, that's not easy for everyone. But I would just tell you that we had the greatest time. We sat there for 5 hours, and we just sat and chatted. And the takeaway I have from it is I don't know why we have to wait to go see people we love and care about dearly when they have cancer. Like, let's just do these things, people. Let's get, hey, there she is. She's on right now. She's not, I thought she had her radiation treatment, but it's 8:15 where she lives. So my just big takeaway, by the way, would be, and again, I understand not everybody has $200 just that they can just go throw away. But so I'm going to eat potbelly for 2 days on the road in my per diem. I mean, whatever it's going to be. But I would tell you it was so awesome just to sit and chat with someone I care about dearly and a friend uninterrupted for 5 hours, not playing golf, not doing something else, just chatting. And we had a blast. And I just thought it was wonderful, and I just thought I'd share with all of you that I don't know who that friend is. I have a friend who lives in New York, and we see each other when I come to town in New York once a year for a few minutes, and that's not enough. And I'm going to do my best to try to back up my words here at some point and just fly out and see people, because that's what this world's about. So that's my deep thought to open the show. You know, Shannon, keep fighting. We love you. So that's my thought. Now let's talk basketball. I wanted to open up. We'll get to your questions in a second. I wanted to open up talking about our big man rotation. I think it's pretty fascinating. We're going to open games with Favors and Gobert. And, you know, if you look at that defensive rating a year ago, it's 96.5. And it is incredibly difficult for Quinn Snyder to draw up an offense that works. and is comfortable. And coaches like offense. It's the same thing when you the example I would use a little bit is a football coach. And you can have that kid who's got the great arm and he's unbelievable and he throws the long bomb for the touchdown and it's great and all the fans go crazy. But the truth of the matter is that on that play, there was a blitz from the backside and he didn't read it correctly and he should have dumped it off to the tight end for the 12-yard gain. And instead, he threw into double coverage with the safety over the top and luckily we got a touchdown. But the coach looked at that film and was like, I don't trust this at all. And the fans can't understand why that quarterback's not playing anymore, and it's because the coach can't trust it. And there's an element to the favors go bare combination that I think makes coaches are only comfortable when they know what's going to happen. And frankly, in basketball, when they know they're going to be able to score, that's what makes coaches comfortable, is knowing it, that they can score. They always feel like they can coach defensive stops, if we're really honest about it, but coaches like to know they can score. And I think that's going to be an issue this season of whether or not Quinn Snyder can get comfortable. And this isn't a Quinn Snyder issue. I have this with Nate McMillan. I had this with Ann Donovan. I've had this with every coach I've ever been around. When coaches are not comfortable that they're going to score, then they get uptight and they make substitutions. They feel like effort will always help them and scheme will always help them defensively. And I think that's going to be really interesting. And if you look at our two-man lineups last year, when Favors and Gobert were on the floor together, we've talked about that defensive rating is a 96.5. They are a plus 10.7. The offense was actually fine. It was a 107.2, but it was only for 46 games. You know, their defensive rebounding rate was 80%. It's an incredible number. The offensive rebounding rate was 26%. That's an incredibly high number, just to kind of go with me. You know, there's all these things we do really, really well. It doesn't feel as though we should be able to score very well. And that, I think, will be a story. And if you look at the fourth quarter numbers last year, Quinn almost never went to it, because when it's tied at 92, you have to score to win. You can get all the defensive stops you want. You have to score to win. You have to have flow to what you're doing. If we go to the 15-16 season and go look it up of what Gobert and Favors were that season. Now, this is a healthier Rudy Gobert, a healthier Derek Favors, it was a plus 4.2. It wasn't as good. But again, it only played 49 games together. The offense was a 106.4. It's still above average. That's a credit to Quinn's system. The defensive rating was a 102. Some of these numbers start to resonate. Offensive rebounding rate, 28%. Defensive rebounding rate, 78%. I mean, there's some... It's interesting because the feeling is they can't score with it. The numbers don't necessarily back that up. And that's what's going to be interesting to me with the big man rotation of what happens and how does Quinn deal with that. The next one that gets interesting is what happens when Rudy goes out of the game. So I go, you know, Favors is going to be probably the backup center if he's healthy enough to play those minutes. And this gets to an area where I talked about all of last year. The key to this season, last year I said, was going to be whether or not the Jazz could be elite defensively when Derek Favors is on the floor as the center. And last year, it didn't work. They weren't elite defensively in those circumstances. Now, Derek wasn't right. So it's hard to say that's not going to work. But I think, frankly, this is a big part of Derek's future in the NBA and what he gets paid. You know, he's a free agent at the end of the year. And what is Derek going to get paid next year is going to largely be based on what we find out with how he can play the center. And some of that was that our power forwards aren't great. But last year, our defensive rating when Derek Favors was on the floor, I have Diaw and Gobert off the floor because I don't want to have Diaw as the center and Gobert in this line and Favors. Is the defensive rating was a 106.6, and we were minus 5.3 in those minutes. Okay, that's going to be a really big issue for the Jazz in this upcoming season. Because one thing you probably like to do is have Joe Johnson as your power forward with Favors as your center. And the defensive rating when we did that last year was a 108, which is terrible. And so we're going to make our name off being an elite defensive team. If we're going to be the number three defensive team in the league again, if we're going to be that great defensively, we've got to at least be 103 average when Gobert's off the floor and Favors is on, or else we're going to struggle. And it gets interesting because I think there's some minutes where you start playing around without a center. I think there's some things you do of that sort that I think will be an interesting match. I actually can't find anybody else. I was talking to one of our assistants the other day, and I said, like, do you think we get to a point in which we ever have Jerebko as the five? And he's like, I got what you're saying. I don't think we ever get there. I don't think that we ever just work our way to that point. So the feeling is I think that the center minutes go to Gobert with Favors and then Udo. And Epe Udo's your insurance. If Favors can't defensively move well enough to play center, and Derek does some things great defensively. He's able to get out on the pick and roll. You could switch one through five when he's on top of his game. There's all sorts of things that you can do more with Favors than you can do with Gobert. With Gobert, as great as he is, you're pretty much limited to dropping the big on the pick and roll and trying not to switch out of that pick and roll. With Favors, as we saw in the LA Clippers playoff series, if he's moving and he wasn't feeling good then, he just was gaming it like a hero. You can get out on the pick and roll, you can do some more things defensively. And I think you can do those with Udo as well. And that's that I think will be what's interesting is Udo, who is just, he's not a smooth athlete. He's always been this way since he's been in the league. His running's not particularly smooth. But he's good. He's really, really good defensively. And I think he starts to get time if we cannot find a way to be average defensively when Gobert is off the floor. And I think that's going to be important. The 4 minutes get also interesting. So you got Favors starting, Joe Johnson, and then Jerebko's really good. Jerebko's playing 60. You know, maybe I'm higher on Jerebko than anyone else, and I'm going to be wrong on this. But, you know, Jonas is 16 minutes a night last year on a team that won a lot of games. He played 78 games and played 16 minutes for Boston. And the year before, he played 78 minutes and played 15 minutes for Boston and shot 40% from three over the last 3 years of his 4 years. Since 2013, he's been a 40% three-point shooter. He can't do what Joe Johnson does where he goes down and backs you in and kind of creates that shot. But this guy's a shooter. And the other day in the open gym, I mean, he couldn't miss. So when we start talking about like who's doing what, I think this is a guy that has an impact on this team and plays. And I think those have to be 4 minutes. And so then how do those become 4 minutes? Well, you probably try not to overburden Joe Johnson and tire him out. There's going to be a tendency, I think, to have Joe Johnson try to do a huge amount of our scoring for us because there's not a, you know, we don't have that natural scorer on the floor. And so I think there's going to be a tendency to say, like, all right, in these units, let's just turn it to Joe. And maybe that's going to be the right answer. But that's not an easy thing to ask out of Joe Johnson every night. So you probably have to watch his minutes. You probably like him to close along the way. Jerebko, as a catch and shoot 3-point shooter, last year I think was about 37% from three. If you go to 15-16 and look at those same numbers, he was 42% catch and shoot 3-point shooter. Those are bona fide numbers. So he gets some time there. It'll be curious to see how they intermix it, how they match it. I don't think Tony Bradley gets a lot of time this year, but I think he's going to be fine. I will be curious to see whether or not we drop Cephalosha or Ingles down to four at all in smaller lineups that allow us to play Exum, Mitchell, and Rubio, Exum, Mitchell, and Hood in some sort of spread. I think we're going to have to find a way to spread the floor for Exum and Mitchell. Neither of them are great decision makers. Dante's showing some better passing. Donovan's showing he's a little wild. But both of them are explosive and incredible at getting the basket. And Donovan Mitchell, with any space to beat somebody off the dribble, is like a junior Dwayne Wade going to the rack. And we're going to have to find a way to spread that. And this is going to get back to where I started this whole conversation, which is this That's going to be an easy. Quinn Snyder is going to be comfortable, as every coach in the world is, when that's taking place. And then when you put Favors in there and suddenly Mitchell drives and he runs into the big, it's so difficult and it doesn't feel right unless your defensive rating is 96.5, and then it's just fine. And as cumbersome and as tough as it feels, it's the right answer. So that's what you have to keep an eye on. All right, that's my take on that. Let's get to your questions. Throw them up there. Let's go to all the comments that are out there, and thank you very much for tuning in and joining the program. And by the way, a lot of people have given me thoughts of what they want for this upcoming year. That's been great as well. I super appreciate it. It helps me out a ton. So let's do it. All right, Forrest Scott says, any comments, insight on revenue sharing article situation from Lowe and Windhorst? This is pretty detailed, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the huge huge takeaway is just that the local money between has gotten so huge in the major markets, and that the money is so dramatically different between what LA and Memphis gets. Those are the two scales. It's like $170 million of local TV for LA and $7 million for Memphis. It's a problem. I remember when the new TV deal happened, I was talking with somebody who was our probably number two or three in charge at the time, and he said to me, you know, there's no way we can get enough revenue, even with this TV deal, to pay the salaries. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, the TV deal covers this amount, but our number and the salary cap increases $50 million. We've got to increase our revenue $20 million. That's a large part of what this arena renovation is just trying to survive. I mean, it's fabulous, and it's going to be incredible for us, but it's bringing in a lot of elite upper crust money. If you're corporate and you're in Salt Lake City, there's no place that can give you the experience that they just built. And so you've got to, absolutely got to be have your events at Vivint Smart Home Arena, because the Jazz have built something that's that awesome an experience. That's going to bring in a lot of, that's trying to gap that. So if you think of the old money was at like $60 million, right? And now you're at $100 million. And the new TV deal, so there's a $40 million gap. And the new TV deal probably gave the Jazz an extra $20 million a year. But they still had to suddenly find another $20 million to go fill that gap. Like, where's that coming from in our market? You're not suddenly the next day just getting $20 million more on corporate sponsors. You know, we love Siegfried and Jensen, and we love Les Olson, and we love, you know, Qualtrics, and we love Vivint, but there's not $20 million that's happening. You're not getting it out of the arena renovation either. So this has been as much as the league sounds like it's going crazy and there's all this great stuff, this has been a really significant problem for the league and how you've bridged that gap with these other teams, and then also what an incredible advantage it is for the league to have, for those big teams to have that kind of money coming in. So that's the best way I can explain it. The Jazz, what's incredible if you read that article, is that the Jazz are making money while being the 28th market. It means that, you know, really what's incredible about the Jazz, and this may not matter to you, but from someone who's inside the organization, this is what the people that work for the Utah Jazz should be most proud of. I don't know the numbers anymore, but for a while, our TV deal was, you know, we're 29th local market, and our TV deal was like 15th because you guys are so passionate about the team that people are willing to pay. Our sponsorship dollars, which, you know, we have about behind, I think only San Antonio has less, and Memphis have less revenue, and then maybe Oklahoma City, we're 27th now. Like, we were 15th. Well, that's a great tribute to our salespeople. It's a great tribute to the commitment of those longtime sponsors we're talking about. It's a great commitment to the community as a whole. It's a great commitment. It's a great statement about the Millers. It's right. Our revenue, I don't know if this is true anymore. Our revenue on a home game, this is going to be very different now, used to be like $1 million. And I think they said in the Warriors were getting like $8 million for a playoff game. Like, that's the kind of difference we're talking about. So our organization has done amazing stuff. This is really inside baseball, probably more than you care about, but this is the stuff where the pride of this organization really comes through, and you know, it doesn't win games, but it's what keeps the franchise going on. Let's see. Bodie says, is there any chance Cephalosha starts over Ingles? I think it makes a lot of sense, actually. I think Cephalosha gets in there. I'm a big believer in make the best player on the other team uncomfortable for the opening minutes of the game. And then I think I really like Ingles playing with Mitchell and Exum to calm them down a little bit and have those ball handling skills. So to me, there's a real chance of that. It makes a whole lot of sense. I don't know. Joe's a dramatically better shooter than Cephalosha. So that's the one thing that if we're really honest about Thabo, and boy, I talked to him the other day. What a great guy. I mean, I know this sounds weird, but like, what an adult. What an interesting young man to talk to. He's not a great shooter. So he shot 34% from three last year, 34% the year before, 32% the year before that. Like, he's not Jerebko and Joe Johnson and Joe Ingles at 40%. That's a considerable difference. And so that's the one thing I think you have to be aware of. But I kind of like the idea. And then at 33 years old, I like him knowing his sentiments. He was a catch-and-shoot guy at 35% last year, which is really what he's going to get most of his shots at, is a three-point catch-and-shoot. And the year before, he was 34.5. When he had to pull up a year before, he was at 20% catch-and-shoot, or 20% on three off the bounce. Like, that's not his game. So Joe's a much better offensive player. Which I think you have to be but I like the idea. I think it's probably one that gets discussed and figured out, and when you're trying to figure out the how this all works. Is the league ready for expansion? Seattle and who else? Well, I would like Seattle and Vancouver. I think Seattle and Kansas City or Louisville is probably the answer. And really, truthfully, and this is sad to say today because what they're going through, but Mexico City is the city the NBA really wants to expand to. That's the only one that brings in a new marketplace. So that's the one the NBA, but the NBA hasn't expanded in a long time. And this will probably sound funny to you because a lot of people had a problem with it, but I actually think Shelvin Mack is the answer to why the league can expand. Like, Shelvin Mack is a pretty good basketball player who's going to have a hard time getting minutes. And if you're expanding, he plays, but he's fine. To me, that's a pretty obvious. We could expand easily right now. It's just a question of whether the owners want to split the share. Do you think Favors will be there when the season starts? Absolutely. Derek looks really good right now. He looks better every week. I talked to him for a long time the other day. I think he's confident that he's getting better, and he's moving a little. He doesn't move quite right, but he moves a little bit better each day. So absolutely, I think he will do that. How much does Donovan Mitchell play this year, says Donald? I think Donovan Mitchell plays this year depends on how much Donovan Mitchell learns how to play inside of a system. And while still bringing that, I mean, I said this out of Summer League. The question to me is going to be that exuberance, that abundancy, that just kind of almost ignorant energy, if that makes sense, how much that can be corralled into productiveness while simultaneously letting him still be him. And if he can figure out how to not turn the ball over and not take a lot of bad shots, still be aggressive, still be Donovan Mitchell, then I think he plays a pretty darn good amount. I think that would be the best way to say that. All right, let me go to some of the other questions here. I don't know what Tyler asked. Who gets more crunch time minutes, Derek Favors or Ricky Rubio? I would guess Ricky Rubio. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with the crunch time minutes with Derek. If we're ahead, I think you go to that defensive lineup. If we're tied, you probably got to have an offensive lineup out there. Thank you for doing all you do. Thank you, Steven. I appreciate it. Last year, Hayward, Hill, and Gobert were the leaders of the team. Other than Gobert, do you expect to be our leaders this year, and how will this dynamic impact the team? I think it's going to be formed. I think it starts with Rudy and Joe, and I think Ricky Rubio, from everything I've heard about him, is just a natural leader that people follow. He plays incredibly hard, has a great passion in the game, and I think that wears into the team at some point. I think the key to me on that kind of leadership thing is it doesn't fall on Rodney. Rodney's got to be comfortable. Not asked too much of, and it's got to be comfortable. And I think that's a huge issue. Caleb Whitworth, has Dante Exum's three-point shot improved over the offseason? I think it has, but time will tell. Did my daughter get to meet Zach Lowe? No, she is not yet, but she will at some point. My daughter will be fine. She's crazy. What can we expect from Alec Burks this year? He's healthy. I think this is a really interesting question, Hector. I don't know where he gets minutes. I think we've always tried to ask him to be something else. So we asked him to be a point guard. He's not. We asked him to be the number one scorer. He's not efficient enough. But maybe he's the eighth or ninth guy. And then he's really maybe very good. And I think we let him do that a little bit this year. And I think Donovan Mitchell and Dante Exum better play well. Or else Alec Burks is going to take some of those minutes. And that's where I think you slide down Ingles and Cephalosha and play AB with Rodney and Rubio. This is where this team's going to be really interesting, and lineup numbers are going to be interesting, and we're going to overanalyze them early in the year because of the fact that it's, there's too many lineups and not enough data, and we're going to overanalyze it in two-man pair all the time. Andy Bailey, I'm talking to you, baby. I'm talking to you. So I think that will be – there's just so many options. It'll be interesting to see. But I think AB will play, and AB's healthy. And if you listen to the interview yesterday with AB, that's a different dude. That's a different dude. Do you think Joe Johnson plays more minutes in the regular season than he did last year, and how many points can he average? I think you got to be really careful with that with Joe Johnson. Joe Johnson is crossing over a age limit that is just most players are not very good, and he wasn't very good in Brooklyn when they made him do it. He's 36 years old now. And there are just not a lot of guys at 36 years old who are particularly good. And he played 23.6 minutes last year. He played 33 the year before. I think you've got to be very careful of pushing him much further than he did last year. But I think he'll average 11, 12 points a game. I think we could have a lot of guys averaging between 8 and 15 points a game. And I think that's how we're going to have to do it. I think Gobert is going to average his 12 or 13. Rodney Hood's going to average his 15. Donovan Mitchell might average his 14. Joe Johnson's going to average his 12. Joe Ingles is going to average his 9. Derek Favors is going to average his 13 or 14. AB might average his 8. I don't know who they're all going to be. Ricky Rubio, what does Rubio average? I don't even know. I haven't moved Ricky Rubio into my Jazz player section. So I actually have to do the old-fashioned thing and actually type it in. Sorry, Ricky. I will right now. Sorry, I have a pop-up on my that gives me Ricky every player's. Ricky Rubio's going to average 11 points last year in 32 minutes. I would guess that Ricky Rubio does about the exact same thing. He averages that same kind of the breakdown. So I think that that's who we're going to be to get our 90 points is going to be seven guys averaging 12. Probably not exactly, but something of that sort. Is there a logjam for minutes at the guard positions? I actually think there's a logjam for minutes. I think we have a starless team other than Rudy that has. So if our starting five, just go with this for a second. Our starting five is Rubio, Hood, Ingles, Favors, Gobert. Now, I think all of the following guys can play. So the natural one is Exum, Mitchell, Cephalosha, Joe Johnson, Epe Udo. Okay, well, now Jarebko can play. Neto can play. Burks can play. I think Bradley's going to be able to play. Royce O'Neal's a nice player. Is that 15? Did I just do the roster? They can all play. Royce O'Neal's a nice player. So, it'll be interesting. Who's the MVP of the Jazz? Better be Gobert. We're in a lot of trouble. I mean, I guess I take that back. If it's Favors or Rodney and Gobert's as good as he was last year, then we're awesome. But it better be Gobert. Is Igor Kokoschkov getting any buzz around the league as a future head coach? I think so. Igor's my coffee buddy. We go to coffee every single morning we can on the road. I'm so happy for him. I just am through the roof for him to win that. We've been texting back and forth. He's just so great. We talked, I remember in Portland, we were walking, talking, going to the coffee shop about, and we try to find coffee shops that are pretty far away, so we get a good little walk and talk, and way to go, Igor. Way to go. Just totally awesome. He won the Euro Cup for Slovenia as the head coach, by the way, for those who do not know that. What should we expect from Dante this year? Is he a point guard, or is he playing the wrong position all the time? He's going to have to prove what position he's going to play. He's going to have to prove how he's going to be a successful NBA player. He's going to have to prove he can defend physically enough. He can have to prove that he can fight. He's got a lot to prove this year. I give him a tabula rasa. I hold nothing. I think the last years have been brutal. It's his first basketball offseason. He's stronger. He's older. He's more mature. Let's go. You know, the ACL was brutal. It just derailed his entire career. So this is the first chance I think we get to see who he is as a player. And I can't wait. That interview is going to be good coming up too, by the way. Vedante Exum gets to know. Not that it matters now, but what are your thoughts on Diaw signing? It was interesting. I think he just wanted to stay in France and may not have had a great offer in the NBA, and he might come back to the NBA at some point. Boris is happy. I don't have a lot of guys in this league who I think are happy. People always ask me, you know, what's it like to... I go, you know what? I spent a lot of time with a lot of guys with a lot of money that aren't particularly happy. And Boris is one that I knew was happy. I will tell you, I was impressed by Cephalosha, Jerebko, and Udo in my conversations with them of how adult and grounded they seem to be and comfortable in their skin. I'm very impressed by those three. I'm not sure what it does for wins, but if we start to win games that people don't expect us to win and can't figure out why, I think that's going to be the answer. That they just have, the Dennis has just added these very, very impressive, high quality guys. I liked Jerebko a lot. There was another player I liked more that I thought we should have signed. Having spent time with Jerebko now and considering some of the background on the other guy I was talking about, I get it. And that's where Dennis is better than us being pundits. I don't know when the Nike jerseys will be available, Doug. Shout out to JP Gibson. Gosh, dang it, man. That's just not right. Am I allowed to swear on this? I've never said the F word on this show, and I'm about to and follow cancer with the next word, and I think everyone will be all right with that. I mean, dang it. This JP Gibson crap is just not fair. At all. Frankly, what Shannon's going through is not fair either. None of it's fair. Fuck you, cancer. Okay. What was Favors Pack in 2015-16? Wow, the transitions in this show today are from me tearing up to J.P. Gibson to talking about the front court as though it actually matters in life. Wow, my head is just totally jacked up. How does anyone live inside of it? Oh, only I have to. Derek Favors Pack last year was a negative 0.8, which was terrible. Rodney Hood was too. That is going to be the story of the season, whether those two guys can be average. Derek Favors in 15-16 was a 0.3. And in 14-15 was a 0.7. That would be great, wouldn't it? All right. I think we're done. How much truth is there Favors saying he'd be a good three-point shooter next season? I think that's a stretch, but if he's 33%, that's fine. And if he takes them twice a game, if he takes three a game and makes one, that's fine because that gives you just enough to make sure you go out there. I think it's a stretch. I really want to know how Cat, Peck, Wiggins will do with Rubio on the floor. That's an interesting... Let's do that. That's good. This is what this show's about, me doing research right at the moment. This will take a second or two. Neil, that's really good. I haven't thought about that. Alan Horton. This will take me a second or two. I got to go change a bunch of stuff here. All right, so let's do Minnesota. And let's do Wiggins. So if we actually just do Wiggins on the floor, and we're actually just doing Wiggins... We just want to know what Wiggins is on the floor without Rubio. You know, last year, I don't think he had the same impact on these guys as he did in the past. So let's go traditional stats. Oh, here we go. Traditional stats? Locke's going to traditional stats? So Wiggins last year, we'll do these three quickly. It's kind of interesting. Wiggins last year shot the exact same from the field and shot better. Oh, wait, no, that was the team. Wiggins shot the exact same from the field and shot better from three when Rubio was off the floor. Okay. So he did not, Rubio did not have that impact. And I think this is going to be universally true a little bit. I don't think he had the same impact last year. Karl Anthony Towns was the exact same with Rubio on the floor or off the floor. 54%, 37% from three. Who was the third one? Oh, Peck. I don't have Peck. Take a while to go figure that one out. That would bore you to death. So, yeah, I don't think Rubio had that big an impact this last year. All right. Wait a sec. How do you think the short preseason will affect the team? I think it'll be hard. I think it'll be really hard on Boston. I think it'll be really hard on Utah. I think it'll be hard on teams that have major changes and intricate systems. When you were talking about cap space yesterday, I thought we weren't going to have any unless we let everyone walk. We should have some cap space next year, but I could be wrong, Tyler. That was my understanding. I will find out more about that. Oh, they're telling me I can put a mask on myself? Like, what can I do now? No, I can just make myself look stupid. Blah! So, and I can turn myself around. Oh, good. Look at Facebook trying to be like Snapchat. All right, that is the show. Thank you very much for tuning in. Great to chat with you. Talk to you soon. Adios.